beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We're going to start out here in a couple of minutes with Robin Sachs. You know her as a former ADA out of Los Angeles County. Her website, robinsachs.com, talks about all the books she's written, all the news work that she's done, all the victims' advocacy that she's done, and we're going to get an update from her on the Grayson Vaughn case, you know, the adoption case out of Ohio, and talk about the murder of Ronnie Chasen out of Hollywood, and I want to get her thoughts on the Amber Alert for the Skelton Boys in Michigan, and, you know, just how closely does this case resemble the Anthony case? You know, if you read the story on ScaredMonkeys.com, it talks about the about an individual named Joan Taylor, who the father claims he left the children with. It's a heartbreaking case. After that, someone who hasn't been on the show for a little while, so we're going to spend some extra time with her, criminal profiler Pat Brown. You see her on Nancy Grace and all the other shows. Again, talking about Ronnie Chasen, that high-profile murder case out of Los Angeles and Hollywood. And I want to get her thoughts, and we're going to take a little bit of a different look at the Holloway investigation and the jawbone that was recently ruled out to be Natalie Holloway. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes here on Scared Monkeys Radio. To remind you, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. You can listen to the show live, pick up commentaries, past shows, leave comments, whatever. And, of course, the main page is scaredmonkeys.com. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back here with Robin Sachs on The Dana Pretzer Show.
The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio will be right back.
Jessica.
Hi, Mrs. Johnson. Is Megan there?
Sure. Follow me. The kids are in the kitchen making sandwiches.
Hey, Julie.
Hi,
Megan. Hey, Megan.
Yeah?
You're a total freak. God, you're ugly. And dumb. Oh, and your makeup makes you look like a tramp.
Oh, my God.
Tommy Morris told me you guys made out. Everybody knows. The whole school knows. He said your breath smelled like garbage, and he almost puked. He says you're the most desperate girl he knows. And that dress is totally hideous. You look like a big fat clown. Disgusting. Oh, and by the way, nice zit.
If you wouldn't say it in person, why say it online? Delete cyberbullying. Don't write it, don't forward it. For more information, visit ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Joe's Landscaping. This is Joe.
Oh, hey, Joe. I'd like an estimate to install a sprinkler system in the forest.
Okay, your property's on forest land?
Oh, no. It is the forest.
I don't follow.
Well, I'm calling around for estimates to install sprinklers throughout our forests.
What?
Well, let me explain. We're a grassroots group looking for funding to combat people's recklessness with fire in the forest. We can't get funding if we don't have an estimate, so, you know.
Are you serious?
Yeah. We're calling it the National Sprinkler System. Isn't that great?
You want to know how much a sprinkler system would run you for the forest?
Uh-huh.
That doesn't even make sense, sir.
Oh, no. Oh, you know what? You're right. Maybe we should just map out Olympic National Forest first.
Is this a joke?
No. Imagine being able to flip a switch and put a fire out.
Flip a switch. You know how much land you're talking about?
I know. It seems big, Joe.
It ain't seems big.
Well, they built that pipeline thing. That's pretty big.
No. I'm sorry. I can't help.
Wait, Joe.
Only you can prevent wildfires. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, the Ad Council, and this station.
Red Defender, you've got to help us.
us. Mole Man has fired his darkening missile towards the sun. It'll put the world in shadow.
Don't worry. Too late to catch the missile. I'll just fly quickly around the Earth in reverse time.
The Red Defender begins to circle the Earth faster and faster until his momentum literally changes Earth's rotation on its axis.
I'm back, citizens. No need to thank me. Strange. It's dark in the middle of the afternoon. And where is everyone? You, old man, with a flashlight.
I was young just a minute ago.
I must have gone the wrong way and sped up time. Whoops. Sorry about that.
Okay, we're back. You know my next guest, Robin Sachs, is a former ADA out of Los Angeles County, a regular guest on the program, author, victims advocate, analyst on NBC News and other stations, and always a pleasure to have her here. Robin, how are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Now, I haven't prepped you on this part yet, because we're going to talk in a little bit about Grayson Vaughn and then Ronnie Chasen a little bit, but I'm just curious if you've had a chance to take a look at this new case of the missing boys in Michigan. Skelton, I believe, is their name, and the father talks about how he left the boys with a person named Joan Taylor, and sort of reminiscent of Casey Anthony somewhat. Your thought on that case, if you can.
Well, actually, it's interesting because here we are at a time where we're now dealing with yet another case of, you know, little boys that are missing. Kind of we see these cases of little girls, but I know that when the case surfaced over this holiday weekend, and I know it's a holiday in the United States, not in your Canada, but over this weekend, you know, you start to look at this compared to the Kyron Foreman, and then you look at the Hawkins, and some of these other cases. And yes, this is another case that does sound potentially eerily similar to the Casey Anthony, in that do we have a case of a parent that just doesn't want to have their kid, and instead of coming and utilizing the legal means, which is what we saw be potentially in Kyron Foreman, but stepmom and obviously Casey Anthony, and potentially in this case, this is a growing epidemic where we have to now take the fire department drop off your baby and extend it to up until kids are teenagers.
Yeah, exactly. It's a sad case, and I remind the listeners, stay tuned to scaredmonkeys.com and maybe blinkoncrime.com. I'm not sure Blink's covering it or not. It's a sad case for sure. Anyway, the reason I brought Robin on tonight is we haven't had an update on Grayson Vaughn for a little bit. That's that sad adoption case out of Ohio, and we could, like I said before, we could do a whole show just on Ohio. What's been going on with that, Robin?
Well, where we are is unfortunately not very happy news. About 3 weeks ago, Grayson was actually turned over by court order and Grayson's parents, and I say parents, but I'm talking about the Vaughn family parents, cooperated with the judge's order to turn him over to the biological father. Yet that doesn't mean that the fight for him doesn't end. And I think it's really fascinating because I wrote an article for psychology today about talking about the best interest of the child. And there's two groups of people. I get notifications whenever there's an alert or a comment that's made on a post. There's nothing that has gotten more comments and posts than this exact case and issue dealing with this push pull between biological father's rights compared to the best interest of the child. And I think the problem is that the biological father's rights can't. While they have some great arguments, and I'm not here to say that biological fathers shouldn't have rights, the fact is that when you're weighing one right versus another right, one has to win. And I always think that I'm always going to come down on the winning in terms of the child. And the fact that the child is separate from who thinks that, you know, the better parent is, who thinks the better circumstances are, but what's better in the child in the long run. In this case, we've seen the courts continuously ignore that.
Yeah, it's bizarre to say the least. And when we've talked about these cases before, Robin, and I'm getting a few emails here about the phone connection, but it's nothing we can do about that. It's I don't know if it's on my end or your end, but there is a static to it. When we talk about these cases and parental rights versus adoptive parent rights, and all of a sudden the parent, me, whoever, biological parent, decides that they walk in much later, and the adoptive parent, these cases are not all that rare, or are they?
No, I mean, I think the thing that has happened here and what is happening is that you have a system where a mother decides, and it's the mother who, unfortunately, under our laws, gets kind of the first bite of being able to make those decisions when it comes to adoptions and the like. They're the ones who are kind of responsible for doing with what they want to do. But there's also responsibilities, and I think that we talk about father's rights, but we don't talk a lot about father's responsibilities. And part of claiming a right to a child doesn't mean just showing up on the day that the table rule, but it also means supporting a mother during the time of their pregnancy. And that is not what I'm saying. That's what the law says. And so that's kind of where the disconnect begins, is that if this is somebody who wants to participate in this kid's life, then that needs to happen at the moment that they find out that they have a child. And in the case of the Lawrence, and in the case of Ben Margaret, it should have happened when he found out that the birth mother was in fact pregnant with what he believed to be his child, and he should have done and participated in the care of her and the participation of her in order to ensure that this child was going to be one that he was going to be willing to take care of. But what ends up happening in these cases, but once you start bringing litigation and you start getting groups and people who are so interested in the cause that they're willing to fight for the cause more than the kid, and so it's like, in the Vaughn case, I don't understand the motivation here other than to torment everybody around, because there's nothing in this that shows why Ben would want that be the birth mother left Grayson when he did not actively participate in his responsible duties at the time that the birth mother was pregnant.
If you're just tuning in, Robin Sachs is here, and we're getting an update on the Grayson Vaughn case, and there's a link in the show notes to learn more about that case. Turning the page a little bit, Robin, let's talk about Ronnie Chasen, a murder right out of Hollywood, actually occurring in Hollywood. What can you tell us?
Well, yeah, this is kind of a case that's really shaking up the city here in Los Angeles, as a matter of fact, not just kind of from a crime perspective, but also from the Hollywood perspective. Is the crime happened on the corner of Sunset and Whittier, in which Ronnie Chasen, who is a well-known publicist, was leaving the burlesque movie, the Cher's new movie, premiere over at W Hotel, was apparently on her way home to have made some calls, either leaving voicemails to her staff with a list of to-do type of activity. When she, on her route home, was shot, there was allegations that it was five times. The coroner's report that was leaked actually appeared that she was shot three times in the chest, and then there was potentially two other bullets that were shot in her shoulder. And these were slug bullets. It's a case that's really upset the city. One, because there's just not a lot of murders in the Beverly Hills area. When there is a murder in Beverly Hills, it tends to be a robbery gone bad or something where the suspect is immediately identified. But this is a case where it appears that you've got a workhorse woman who was well-regarded in the field, did not have a domestic type of relationship, didn't have kind of the natural telltale signs of what would be a victim of any sort of, or target of any sort of crime such as this, and yet we have her killed in a, very brutal style with no one having seen what happened, and no motive, and no idea of what occurred. So it's shooken up a town that's safe, and everyone, it's a whodunit right now.
Well, yeah, and there's been a lot of speculation, everything from road rage to gang activity to some even discrediting her. I saw surveillance video of her car leaving a lot, an underground garage. Some were saying it wasn't her driving it. Put on your TV cap now and talk a little bit about the coverage about this case. You see it more locally. Does the coverage help or hurt the investigation?
Well, as I drive through Beverly Hills, we are hearing fire in terms of fire departments in the exact jurisdiction of this happened. this is a case where actually TV coverage is probably very helpful. And from a local point of view, excuse me, I'm fighting a disgusting cough illness right now. In any case, where the coverage is actually, from my understanding, very much appreciated by her family, who is searching, begging, wanting answers. She has a surviving brother who is here and clearly wants to memorialize her memory and honor her history and her being, and yet also wants answers. And this is the case where if you can, it's certainly easy to say, okay, it's unsolved, and then we did what we could do, but the media coverage in a case like that certainly will keep it alive. And when you have the Hollywood aspect to it, you're going to naturally have people who are wanting to seek out answers. And frankly, it's a very fascinating case. And the other, kind of just a practical point of view from having worked in Beverly Hills, from the Beverly Hills courts, most of the crimes that yours in Beverly Hills are DUI, some petty theft, maybe get a bar brawl here and there. This is kind of exciting for Beverly Hills PD. This is an opportunity to put them on the map, have them solve something, be able to come up with a theory, and if they can do it, I think they want to.
Robin Sachs is here. Check out her webpage at robinsachs.com. I haven't had you on for a couple of weeks. In that period of time, we covered a lot on Natalie Holloway. There was a lot of hope that, I'm not sure hope is the right word, but yeah, I guess hope is that the jawbone found on the beach in Aruba would have been Natalie, and some of her remains could have returned to Alabama, where she rightfully belongs. It's since been discounted. There have been a lot of people that have came forward even before it was discounted, saying that they can't trust the Aruban authorities, that they believe it's Natalie, but the results will come back negative. Again, that's been ruled out. I'm just curious your thoughts on how that case, even 5.5 years later, seems to dominate the media when it can, and how disappointing to have all this false hope for the family is, because you've worked with so many families, Robin, for them to see this, to hope for this, and then to, bang, get slapped down again.
Well, actually, looking at the Natalie Holloway case, there's only one other case that seems to have the same feeling, and it's your and I, it's not a pun that's intended, but yours and my favorite also is the Ramsey case.
Yeah.
And frankly, here you have, no matter what happens in either one of these cases, that being the Holloway or the Ramsey case, it almost doesn't matter because it doesn't feel that at this point, absent some sort of positive proof, i.e. a picture or a videotape of the crime, that you're going to ever necessarily be able to have a prosecution. So yeah. Each one of these times that we have this kind of false hope in the media, I feel like we all fall for it. And each and every time we think we're going to get answers, so really at the end of the day, what are the answers? Let's look at it from the reverse. Let's say that jawbone was Natalie Holloway. Yes, that would feel like there's a bit of closure in that fact that we know that she was actually murdered there, but is that really any different than what we already know? She was murdered there.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yeah.
Is there really anything different that we're going to find? And I think the same thing goes with the JoBenet Ramsey case. I don't think it's as fulfilling as we think it would be with each clue and bit of closure and absent having someone standing trial. And even if we had the job of Natalie Holloway, I think the reality is that we all know that Yuri Vandersloot is the person who is most likely the person who committed this crime. It even with everything he's done, to be able to prosecute him is a whole different story.
Yeah, and I know the justice system, and we've done show after show after show about that. But one last question, and I'm going to ask your friend of mine, Pat Brown, who's coming on after you tonight. This, and I haven't seen it covered much in the media, just a little bit, that when they allegedly told Joran van der Sloot that this jawbone was found, he laughed. And I guess I've been a cop too long, and I read into that sort of stuff, the body language and the comments and stuff. He laughed, and I kind of had that sick feeling when I heard that he laughed, because the bugger knows exactly what he did with that young girl, and my guess is that laugh was, ha, that's not going to mean much, or you haven't got anything there anyway. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. I have to tell you, it was funny. I was actually in Seattle when I got word that there was a bone that was, a jawbone that was found, because Natalie Holloway, and then it wasn't long after that, but I heard about you and Dennis's reaction. I was like, yeah, that's not it.
No.
It means nothing. And, you know, it's different than Casey Anthony's face who turned white or whatever, or, you know, when she all of a sudden needed medication after they found Kaylee's body. It's just a different reaction. So I don't think that you're using your police naivete. You're using your police brilliant. The fact of the matter is that case, we have a very good idea. We have a person who has confessed to the crime. We have no other suspects. We saw complete corruption in the Rubin system. Whatever evidence comes forth, it doesn't even matter at this point, unless there's another suspect and some sort of brand new evidence, because it's been such a botched case from the beginning that there's just such little chance of justice ever happening. And that's the devastating part about this case. And that's what kind of makes a ruin on my infinity.
Yeah, that's the sad truth, isn't it? Robin Sachs, her webpage, robinsachs.com. As always, ma'am, a pleasure. Take care of that cold, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Robin Sachs. And if you were, you know, when you were a kid, I was going to say if you've ever been a kid, obviously you've been a kid. If you're listening to this program, not many kids do, but a lot of old farts like me do, you know that, you know, you tie two tin cans together with a string, and you could talk between one can and the other. That's what the phone connection sounded like with Robin. I have to apologize. I do not know what's going on. Welcome to live radio here at ScaredMonkeys.com. Anyway, my name's Dan Pretzer. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back with Criminal Profiler. Say that three times real fast. Criminal Profiler, Criminal Profiler, Criminal Profiler. See, even I can do that in Canada. Pat Brown, and continue on with our discussion regarding the murder of Ronnie Chasen, the Holloway case, and get her thoughts on the missing skeleton boys. We'll take a break, and we'll be right back here on Scare Monkeys Radio.
We'll be back with more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio.
The crime dog?
Yep.
I think I'm going to need your help. I've got an internet bully.
Okay, well, what to do is...
Maybe you could put a virus on her computer, or a tracking device, or a bug.
You don't have to do that, are you?
Or maybe we could get an attack dog. You ever see those attack dogs that can, like, rip a person's arm off? Seriously. Or like a SWAT team, a cyber SWAT team or something. Or like an army. Did you ever see that zombie army movie? We should get a zombie army.
Wait. All you need to do to stop an internet bully is delete their messages and never forward them on.
So, no zombies?
No zombies.
Bummer.
Delete cyberbullying. Don't write it, don't forward it. For more information, visit ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
About 2 or 3 months ago, I started having money problems. Ever since then, I've had a pretty hard time keeping up with the bills. The worst part is I can't make the house payments. So when the phone started to ring and I knew it was the mortgage people calling, I didn't pick it up. I just couldn't. And the notices were coming in the mail, too. Lots of them. Now I may lose my house, and I don't know what to do.
If you're facing foreclosure, doing nothing only puts you deeper in the hole. Now's the time to dig yourself out. Call 1-888-995-HOPE today. That's 1-888-995-4673. Because nothing is worse than doing nothing. A public service announcement brought to you by NeighborWorks, the ad council, and this station.
At the holiday party, Chris shows the telltale signs of being wasted. He tells his boss the one about the salesman and the talking bar stool. Laughing, he excuses himself to hit the head. He decides a plant will do just fine. Chris misses the plant. Finished, he raids the company fridge and eats 27 deviled eggs while drinking the special punch nicknamed Rocket Fuel. He makes out with Kathy from accounting. He decides to make a funny holiday card. Sitting on the copying machine, Chris laughs hysterically. He writes, "Happy holidays from Stinky the Elf." He then yells, "Office parties are for losers."
It's easy to tell if you've had way too many to drive. But what if you've had just one too many to drive? Never underestimate just a few. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. I haven't had my next guest on for a little while, but it's always a pleasure to have criminal profiler Pat Brown on the program. You know, Pat, I happened to be flipping around the TV channels the other day, and that's what we do. You know, you have 419 channels, but what do? You just sit there and flip through them. And I came across Pat Brown, not on Nancy Grace, not on one of the other crime shows. She was talking, I don't know what you were talking about, King Tut or something, and I thought, holy man, this gal does talk about just about anything on TV, and you did a good job. What was I watching? Because
The Mysterious Death of Cleopatra,
King Tut. Well, I was close.
Yeah, I figured you were an Egyptian.
Egyptian. And how did you get involved doing a show like that?
Well, it's the coldest case I've ever worked on. Discovery Channel brought me in because they were thinking about the different possibilities of things in history that might not have been analyzed correctly or might. This way we've accepted myths that aren't really true, and so I started looking into the death of Cleopatra, and I realized quite quickly that so much of the information around her death just didn't make any sense, and especially that snake, the infamous cobra that she supposedly smuggled in to her tomb in a basket full of figs. Apparently passed a really stupid guard who doesn't know how to look into a basket of figs or plenty of cobra. And then, you know, she slowly killed herself for this snake. And when the guards arrived, apparently, in spite of the fact that the domestically sealed tomb, and they say, oh my goodness, she's killed herself with a snake. They don't look for the snake. And if I were in that tomb with a cobra, I'd be looking for it really quickly. So there were a few of all these red flags that went up. And so it became a very interesting case to analyze, 2,000 years old, but, you know, evidence is still evidence.
Oh, yeah, that's fascinating. Actually, maybe they'll get you looking for Jimmy Hoffa next. Anyway, criminal profiler Pat Brown is here, and I talked to Pat off air for a second and asked her about her giving some comments on the missing Skelton kids. And when you read the story, it seems to twinge a little towards the same kind of case like Kaylee Anthony. The dad says he dropped the kids off. And, you know, we talk about so much, Pat, about protecting kids from, you know, sexual predators and child abusers and all this sort of stuff. But, God, we don't talk enough about protecting kids from their own parents sometimes.
There's nothing we can do about it. Isn't that a shame? I mean, it's really sad that some children, you know, they come into this world and the dice are rolled for them. And, oh, looky, you get snake eyes. Isn't that nice? And you get a set of parents who have a questionable questionable behaviors and questionable psychological conditions. And you're stuck with them. And there's nothing the law can do to remove you from that situation unless it gets so egregious and it's so obvious. And it's so provable in the court of law, you know, they can't do anything about it.
Right.
So you're stuck there until, most of the time, until disaster occurs. And in this particular instance, this is what we see. We see three little boys have gone off the face of the map. In my opinion, they were murdered by their own father.
Yeah. It is so sad, and we'll be hearing more about this case, I'm sure, as the days and weeks go on. When I emailed you and asked you to come on, I said we'd talk a little bit about Holloway, and of course that case has been talked about, including on this show, so much for the last 5.5 years, including the last couple of weeks where we talked about the jawbone and everyone was hoping that it would be Natalie. I got a little different perspective, and I want to ask you about this. Put your profiler hat on a little bit. When we all heard before the results came back, and leave it to the Arubans if they knew that there was a wisdom tooth, and Natalie's records showed right away that she didn't have any wisdom teeth that should have been cleared up right away, but instead they wait, and then they whatever his name is, Pepto-Bismol or whatever the guy's name is in Aruba comes out and does a dopey press release, and it was just all a big joke. But, you know, I want to ask you your thoughts on two different things. First of all, following this case as long as it's happened, when the news broke, I saw so many stories and so many comments from people saying, well, geez, we sure hope it's Natalie, but with the Arubans, anything is possible. Was this planted? Did they have Natalie all along? Can we trust them? The other thing I want to talk about, Pat, is, and maybe I've just been a cop too long, but when I heard the report that when they approached Joran van der Sloot and told him that this jawbone was found, he laughed. And I got to admit, when I heard that story, I got a sick feeling in my stomach, you know, thinking, you know, the bugger knows exactly what he did with that young girl, and he knows very well that that jawbone isn't Natalie's. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah. I mean, Joran van der Sloot does know where she is. One of two possibilities. Either the body is so far out at sea that he doesn't believe that any jawbone is going to show up on land at any point, or he has buried her body somewhere else on Aruba, and he knows the jawbone isn't going to jump to the surface and then suddenly run over to a hotel and land in the sand beside the hotel. So he just, just knows it's bogus. And then there's, of course, the other possibility, which is Joran van der Sloot is just a pathological liar and laugh about anything. So I don't think we can put that past him either.
Well, that's true, because he's such a... he's such a jerkwad, this guy, that he would laugh at anything. But when we saw the undercover, if you want to call it, tape with Beth going to the Peruvian prison, and, you know, I got so tired of hearing about how tough this Peruvian prison is. It looks like it's kind of like Club Med for Joran. And we heard all the stories about Beth being arrested and all this sort of stuff, and she snuck in. And what it was is it looked like it was totally arranged, but they tried to make it look like a hidden camera because it would go over to DeVries, and he was outside of the room with the guy with the mic, and they were hiding a little bit. So I get all that TV schlock, but, you know, good for Beth Holloway for going and confronting this dipstick and trying to see if there's any scintilla of truth in his body that he'd try and help. But what about this case? You know, 5.5 years, are we still going to be talking about it 5.5 years from now? Sadly, I think we probably will.
Probably, because the biggest thing is that the family, you know, families never let go. Beth is going to want to believe that at some point in time she's going to get the truth out of that schmuck. And the sad part is, she's not going to unless it benefits him.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for him to give up that information unless he's going to get something out of it. He's a psychopath. So she's not going to go in, and she's not going to get him to feel remorseful or guilty or sad for her. I mean, he can't stand that far away. He just thinks of her. He has no respect for her whatsoever. The fact that he will blackmail a woman whose daughter he murdered, I mean, that's a total creep and a half, you know. So he has not one shred of feeling for her. So she's not going to get anything out of him that way. The concept of paying him, that's probably not a bad one. I'll give you money if you tell me where she is, but unfortunately, you know, she gave him the money and before body was found.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, that's just a plain ripoff.
It's a classic kidnapping story. You pay the ransom and we'll bring that person back. And the most chance...
You show me a body, I'll give you the money. But, of course, at this point, it's not been doing a lot of good, you know, unless he's trying to do something else, like he wants to get a story written or he wants to give some money to his mother or some such thing. Is he trying to prove he's a good guy in some weird way? I mean, there's got to be something in it for your arm before he's going to give up that information. The other thing important is that, you know, if they bring him, say, though, they found a jawbone, he can laugh about it because, A, he thinks they could be just trying to set him up again.
Yeah, well,
because, yeah.
Yeah,
here we go again. And, B, hey, he's already going down in, one location, so I don't know that he's, you know, how worried he is about the Aruba thing. I think he knows he's never going to be charged in Aruba, so he's not, really care.
Well, this Peruvian prison, I get so sick of hearing about how tough it is. And then you see the pictures of him walking around there eating chocolate
right.
bars and drinking.
Actually, you know, when I heard, you know, when people started saying that, because I was on every television show I was on, said the same thing, especially when I talked about Nancy Grace, I heard people say how horrible this was going to be. And I kept saying, I don't think it's going to be that bad, folks.
Yeah.
He's going to be a celebrity down there. He doesn't have any issues with the local people down there particularly. And maybe he does with, you know, the girl's family that he killed, and Peruvians who are not criminals. But he's in with a bunch of criminals who are psychopaths themselves. They could care less if he killed some girls. You know, so he can be easily a celebrity in there. And the fact that they actually are allowed to walk around more so than an American prison, it's almost like a little village in there. You know, it's not such a bad deal. And, they keep going on about how you have to go to the bathroom and a hole in the floor. Hey, I've gone to the bathroom and a hole in the floor. And I've traveled enough parts of the country, I mean, the world, where I've had to. That's what my bathroom was. I survived. It wasn't the worst thing in the entire world. You know, so they just, I agree with you. I think that he's doing really well, way too well down there.
But there's that whole, it's a strange, almost an ideology pad of the criminal and the admiration that some of these crazy folks out there have for them. You know, you can go back to John Dillinger and the gangsters in the 20s and 30s and to the serial killers, even Charlie Manson. I can remember doing a commentary about Charlie Manson, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago and on YouTube, and the thing got hundreds of thousands of hits, and boy, did I get a lot of hate mail about that. This guy, 70-some years old, is still idolized by a bunch of people, and sadly, there are loons out there that think the same of Joran van der Sloot.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are those people who think he's actually innocent.
Yeah.
There are those people who want to be hooked up with somebody famous because it makes them feel more important. There are those people who wish they could be like him and flaunt society, flaunt the government, flaunt the regular life, get away with stuff that, you know, they can't get away with or wish they could get away with. So there's a lot of different psychologies wrapped up in, you know, we sometimes would say, why do people like somebody like Joran van der Sloot? Why? We're assuming that they're typically emotional, you know, they're normal people. But there's a lot of personality disorders out there. And those personality disorder people are the ones that are thrilled about Joran van der Sloot's exploits or fascinated by them. They have their own problems, so they're just hooking up with something else that makes, you know, makes them feel important and good. So we're going to see a lot of that with him. Although I've seen a lot less with him than something like the Barefoot Bandit.
Yeah, that's right, too.
He got a huge Facebook page, you know, when he started running here. He crashed that plane into the Bahamas and started running around and became a little folk hero because he hadn't killed anybody. So a lot of people could relate to his just, you know, wildness, I think, and, you know, again, flaunting society and doing whatever he felt like doing. And they were like, go.
Yeah, exactly. What was that, the movie with DiCaprio in it? He was the fraud artist.
Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Same thing. And
I think there's an admiration of people who can get away with stuff. We look at the fun side of that instead of the extraordinarily negative side, which is basically a person who's a psychopath is manipulating and using people and really doing them a lot of harm, but, you know, it's always played up in the movies as kind of being less, you know, not so harmful.
Yeah.
So like kind of fun little expedition.
Exactly, and Hollywood hasn't helped because they put these guys on a pedestal, and there seems to be an ad. You know, when I was growing up, your hero was a sports star or a movie star, John Wayne or something. I'm aging myself here, but now they love the either the dopey teenage celebrity, the anti-hero. Yeah, that's a good word for it. Pat Brown is here. Pat Brown's here, criminal profiler. You see her on Nancy Grace. And, oh, by the way, our best wishes from Scared Monkeys Radio to Nancy Grace for a quick recovery. I did hear about her illness, and we wish her the best from all my listeners. Let's talk about Ronnie Chasen. A Hollywood murder is something right out of a Hollywood movie. This is something the Beverly Hills Cops, I just had our mutual friend Robin Sachs on a few minutes ago talking about that case. And, you know, in Beverly Hills, you may get an overparked car or a shoplifter or the paparazzi chasing Lindsay Lohan, but you don't get a murder like this. What's your thoughts on Ronnie Chasen?
Well, this is a really interesting homicide. And definitely, I agree with the police that she was indeed targeted. I don't see this as a random crime. Obviously, it was the carjacking. She wasn't shot and then pulled out of the car and the car stolen. She was not robbed. Clearly, the person wanted to kill her. And the question really comes down to who did this and who's behind this. The police have stated they thought it was a hired hit, professional hit, because of the type of bullets, type of ammunition used. These hollow points.
Right.
I want to make sure that they're, you know, successfully kill somebody. And to some extent, I disagree with that because I own the same things. they're in my gun. So, I mean, one of the things that happens when you have a 9mm and that is what was used to kill her, but when you're looking at self-defense, one of the things you ask somebody, even if you're, you know, totally, I'm fairly unfamiliar with weaponry. And you think, gee, I don't know, what should I put in this gun? Often they will tell you, you want something that's going to stop that sucker.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole point. If you're going to shoot him, you want to kill him, because the whole point of shooting him is to stop him. You don't want him running forward on you and continue, you know, and shooting you. So you want to drop him really quickly. That's why people want the bigger gun as opposed to a small gun. You don't want to have a .22 as a self-defense weapon because it's too small. So you prefer to go to 44, actually, but 9mm is the next best for 44. So go with something with good ammunition. So I had that same ammunition. It's just a good solid ammunition for wanting the action to be taken care of. So I can't quite say that it's going to be professional, but it could well be. It could be either somebody who knows what he's doing, certainly somebody comfortable around weaponry, because those shots were placed close together. Of course, they're talking about a 9mm again, so you know, you pull the trigger on a 9mm, it's pretty easy. You go, pop, 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 your hand's not moving that much.
Right.
So place five, fairly, you know, it's a close shot. It was apparently he shot from the driver's side, at least that's what it seems like, into the passenger side window and right after, so it was fairly close. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they were fairly close together because it wasn't that long a distance. But certainly the person was capable with that weapon. But I think what's most interesting to me is that they were all chest shots.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And some would say that makes it professional. Because, you know, when you're a police officer, you know, you're shooting at somebody,
yep.
You don't usually shoot at the head.
Yep.
It's much harder to hit than to shoot at the chest.
Right.
But when you're shooting at the chest, you know, when you're practicing at the range, for example, you know, it's quite a distance. That's one of the reasons you're shooting at the large area. You know, you're shooting at the body because, you know, it's hard to hit the smaller target. But this guy was right there to a window. It's kind of hard to miss the head at that range. If I were trying to kill somebody at that range, I'd shoot 5 bullets into her head. Not into her body where I could not hit her heart. So my question is, why didn't that person shoot her in the head? And the only thing I can come up with is somebody did not want her disfigured in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Or either somebody said, kill her, but don't shoot up her face. I don't want her looking like a mess.
Right.
Or they didn't want to make her look like a mess, which makes me wonder if there's somebody close to her that does wants to. I couldn't find anything about her family because I just looked this up. Did you know anything about her family?
No, and the thing is there was a little bit of press on it for a while, and then all of a sudden, bang, we don't hear anything anymore. But I find the case fascinating, and you're right. How important is that, regardless if it's this case or others, when you do investigate or you do profile? We all hear the crime of passion. There was a famous case up here in actually where I live with a politician named Colin Thatcher and his wife. who was brutally murdered, and when you use the word brutally murdered, that was just it. And or the one headshot, or like you say, what's the significance of the shots just to the chest? I don't know. It's fascinating. But what about the Beverly Hills Police? And I was kind of making fun of it a little bit earlier, but this isn't something that happens there very often. They're going to need a lot of help from the public, and there'll be a lot of, I'm sure, forensics, computer analysis, right, all sorts of things going to happen.
Yeah, a lot depends on, you know, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, if I'm with the police, the first thing I'd be checking is, I'd be checking those insurance policies to find out whether some money is going to somebody who wanted to get rid of her sooner than later. But then that's why, again, they didn't want a shot in the face, because they wanted the funeral to look pleasant.
Right.
You know, not to have to have a closed casket, not to upset the rest of the family because they wanted her money, but they wanted to look good. Or whether somebody had some other issue with her, but still, again, did not want to disfigure her for whatever reasons. So I'd be looking at her relationships. I'd be looking at people close to her, whether this or the person who did it themselves or they hired somebody to do it. I'd be looking at people very, very close to her. And I'm sure that's what they're examining right now, which is maybe why they're being pretty quiet about it. I mean, if you're looking for a complete stranger, you're more likely to go out to the public and say, what can you tell us? But if you believe that somebody close to her, first of all, you want to start interviewing all those people, alibiing everybody, checking all their cell phone records, seeing whether they are calling somebody, you know, to hire somebody in, or they've had, you know, 40 phone calls to some strange fellow who was in prison for less, you know, 10 years and was suddenly out, or whether, you know, there's something like that put them around that location at that time, whether they've had a recent altercation, or whether they say they're online to get money. I'm sure that's all the kinds of things they're checking out. I say that lack of a headshot really, really bugs me, because it's such a close hit. I cannot see why they wouldn't shoot her in the head. If they want to make absolutely sure she was just dead, that's the way to go.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
So, that's the reason for the shots going into the body at that close range.
Pat Brown is here. You can check out our website by clicking on the link in the show notes. So what's next for you? What am I going to see Pat Brown on TV next when I flip around, Dancing with the Stars, maybe?
You know, I wouldn't mind actually doing that, because I have ballroom dancers in my family. My mother and father were ballroom dancers. My sister Carol is actually a group dance competitor in the adult members division.
Oh, yeah.
And my other sister dances as well. I'm only one who really hasn't taken it up, although I have done Bollywood style Indian dance. I always thought, wouldn't it be fun to be on Dancing with the Stars? That would be fun.
Yeah, you
so
bet.
If you know anybody on that show, tell them to give me a ring. I'll be happy to see if I can actually learn the ballroom dance as well as my family or buddy.
Absolutely, I will. But, you know, every time we turn on the TV, there's another story, Pat. And you and I know that, you know, we talked about the Skelton Kids earlier. And, of course, the Anthony trial is going to be coming up.
Right.
There's so much, you name it, poor Kyron Horman, the young girl from Australia. Her name's slipping my mind here right now.
Zara Baker. We have so many things that have untied ends out there. I mean, we wonder now with the Kyron Horman, whether anybody's ever going to be arrested in that case. In the Zara Baker case, we wonder whether Adam Baker, the father, is ever going to be, you know, indicted on anything there related to that case. I'm still curious about the Tiffany Hartley case, because I have never bought Tiffany Hartley's story. She's one whose husband was supposedly shot down in Mexican waters on his jet ski and then vanished. There's just a lot of stories out there that we're all waiting to see whether what the outcome is really going to be, and whether there's going to be justice on those cases. I know, even if we go back to people like little baby Gabriel. Remember baby Gabriel?
Sure.
The big story when his mother Elizabeth said she dumped him in the trash, and now she's in prison, but not for, she's in jail awaiting trial, but not for murder. And we've never found that child, and we still wonder what happened. And then Haley Cummings. I mean, everybody's in prison now that's related to Haley Cummings, but nobody's been charged with her murder. So it's fascinating when you see sometimes when cases first come out, and sometimes we see it even the police department say, you're not going to get away with this. We're going to solve this case. And then a year goes by and we see it's still sitting out there. So we have a lot more cold cases than we realize.
Yeah, unfortunate, but something that needs to be talked about, and the media is covering it the best way they can. We do our little bit here, and you do a great job on the work that you do, Pat. Always a pleasure, and let's not make it so long next time.
Okay, sounds like a plan, Dana.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And that's Pat Brown, criminal profiler. I got to apologize. I don't know what's wrong with my phone system tonight. I tell you, it sounds like a tin can between two tin cans between a string, or however you want to say that. But our technical wizards at Scared Monkeys Radio, I'm sure, will be able to clean up that audio a little bit, and hopefully before the next show we can get that fixed up. So we're going to end up a little bit early because I'm definitely having a phone problem, but I do encourage you to check out the website at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com and pick up the show live or a podcast of past shows or the daily commentary. And I always appreciate your comments and appreciate your listenership. And we'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.